The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay, I guess we'll turn. Can you all see the screen? We're actually doing a little bit on the screen, so you can stay over there if you want. It's just so funny how everybody said to sit on one side of the room. So.
It must be some bad juju over on this side. Sprinkle some holy water or something over there.
But I guess what we should do is get started. This is being recorded for the people who could not be here, so I wanted to let everybody know that. So thank you all for coming. I guess if you're here because you're interested in criminal law, either a prosecution or defense or some other aspect, international, white collar, all of the above, some aspect of the policy. So what we're doing here today is to sort of maybe highlight for you some things about our curriculum and programs here at Washington College of Law that we can criminal law, criminal procedure, and of course called criminal defense theory and practice. Professor Brent Smith is a professor in the community economic development clinic, and also I'll let her introduce herself and what she teaches. But she knows all about prison raping and great programs around that, and also teaches a course that involves a writing component that is excellent. Professor Andy Kinney, who is Associate Director of the Law and Government Program and also teaches a course on white collar crime, who is practice white collar crime. And then we have two students with us this year for the first time. We thought that would add, you know, a great perspective. Robert Baez, who is going to be at the which public defender office?
The law offices of the Shelby County Public Defender in
Tennessee. Right, through a great program called the Gideon's Promise Program, which I'll tell you a little bit about. Dominique Anglade, am I pronouncing that correct? Who is going to be at the Manhattan DA's office?
Yes.
So we thought we'd have a student from both the defense and prosecution perspective. I want to start off by very briefly giving some sort of general comments about just sort of generally the must-do courses and some tools that we have here at Washington College of Law that you can use to really help you through this sort of curriculum choice thing that can be so difficult, but there's so much going on here at Washington College. Well, I always tell people the great thing about the Washington College of Law is that there's so much going on. The bad thing about the Washington College of Law is that there's so much going on because sometimes it's so hard to make choices. So one of the first things I want to talk to you about is the Pathways program that we have. Has anybody here heard of Pathways? It's relatively new, but it's great. For those of you who have not, I want to show you how to get to it at the website. You're on the home page, and actually there's a link to it right there. That's how important we think it is. Just click on Pathways. When you get to it, there's a description of what Pathways is. It really is a way for students who are trying to select courses to sort of figure out what we have to offer here at the Washington College of Law and sort of what's the best way of taking the courses in what order and so on and describing them. And if you scroll down, you'll see all these different areas. And we, of course, are going to click on the criminal law link. And when you get to the criminal law link, it will list foundational courses. These are courses that you're either required to take or you pretty much should be required to take. So, of course, we know the first year criminal law course. Crim Pro, you're required to take after 7 years. Ethics, you have to take. And Crim Pro 2 and evidence, although not required, are sort of the, we think ought to be required. You just, those are the sort of must-do courses for anyone who's interested in criminal law. You definitely should take those. And then there are key electives in all kinds of different areas. And there are experiential courses and other related courses. In the interest of time, I'm not going to go through it, but visit that page, please, by all means. And of course, you can click on each link. It'll take you to the course description and so on. So that's a terrific tool that everybody ought to be using as you're making a course selection. I also want to draw your attention to the Criminal Justice Institute's website. So how many of you here know that we have a Criminal Justice Institute? Only one or two people know that. That makes my heart just ache so much. So we actually have a Criminal Justice Institute. The way you get to it is you just add on / criminal justice. So wcl.american.edu/criminal justice. You go there. Here it is. policy is, to the interest of time, I won't describe it because the description is there. But we have, if you're interested in criminal law, you really should join the Institute. We want students to join. And the way students join is right here, student registration. Click on that and please join the Institute. Why should you join the Institute? Because we put on all kinds of programs year-long programs that will help you to get jobs. That's like our number one goal. So in the fall, for example, we do a resume review session where you invite alums that are practicing criminal law intensive prosecution. Come in, pair you with alums. We'll go through your resume, talk to you about your area of interest. There's an externship fair, a specific criminal law externship fair that's done in the fall where criminal law employers come in. We do all kinds of other programs where we have alums coming in or just sort of substantive programs about a number of different issues. We did a program last week on racial, ethnic, and religious profiling. We did programs around the Ferguson event. And the other great thing about it is that we also have a listserv. So when you join it, you're automatically on the listserv. And we send out notices all the time about jobs, externships, programs, all kinds of things that are really helpful to you. Likewise, you all know about the faculty practice groups. So is everybody here a member of the criminal law faculty practice group?
Go to faculty.
If you're not, go on the same page, thank you.
And
faculty.
Then just go. Yep.
Click on faculty practice groups and register. So you should register both for the criminal law faculty practice group and the Justice Institute. Quite frankly, there's a whole lot of overlap. But just to be on the safe side,
right,
make sure you're getting everything, register for both. You'll be on that listserv and you'll be getting a lot of good information. One last thing about the Criminal Justice Institute, a couple of things that are really great on here is, if you click on the jobs, fellowships, and internships, there is an employment resource book that is golden. And it lists, just about all of the prosecution and defense organizations in the country. It has alums that work at each one, their contact information, and they've already said they're happy for you to contact them directly. They have questions about the office, they have interviews there, and so on. So it's a very valuable resource. One last thing I'll show you before moving on is we have an alumni map. We've got a lot of them today, and I don't have time to do that. But it's a map of the United States. If you're interested in working in Maryland, you click on it, it'll show the alums who are working in various offices there. So it's a really, really terrific resource. So please check them both out. So before I turn it over to, I think, Professor Tenney next, my general advice is, most of it I've already told you, the basic foundational courses. I will say, and I know that Professor is going to talk in detail about this, but you should absolutely try to get in the criminal justice clinic. If you can't get in the criminal justice clinic, have another clinic. There's a letter telling you more about the why that's so very important, the purpose it applies. You should try to get in the clinic, and you should try to do an externship. They're very different. Externships are not clinics. Clinics are not externships. They're two very different experiences. You're not going to be representing clients in an externship. So to get that very valuable experience, you need to be in the clinic. But externships are great because you get an opportunity to be at an office working with an attorney in that specific office, either prosecution or defense, and you get great experience. If you want to be a public defender, there's so many public defender offices in your area. There's no reason why, when you're out applying for jobs, that having that experience on your resume is really going to give you a leg up over someone who does not. Along those lines, last thing I'll say, there are a ton of externships in criminal law. Ava Sanders in our externship office gave me this great list. Please take one of these. Check it out. It's much easier to get externships during the school year than during the summer, she told me to tell you. But if you have questions about it, you should contact her. So try to do the internship, try to do the clinic, try to do both, but if you can't do both, do one or the other. And with that, I'll turn it over to Professor Tim.
All right. Hi, everyone. Thank you for coming today. What I'm going to do is just give you a few quick pointers about the criminal law curriculum. And then after we're all done giving our opening remarks, we'll be able to take questions. So any specific questions, let's just hold off until afterwards. The first thing I want to point out is that if you look at the course schedule for next year, well, next year's hasn't been published, but if you've looked at past course schedules, you'll see that we offer several hundred courses every semester. There's no way for you to take every course that's relevant. But I tell you this so that I want you to keep this in mind now. A lot of people don't know this. But after you graduate, you can come back and audit any class at any time for $100. So if there's a course that you just aren't able to make, but you really want to take it at some point, just come back. You can still get the knowledge after you graduate. Another thing I want to focus on is writing samples. Professor Smith is going to talk to you more about classes, where you should be writing, but I just want to talk about it in terms of applying for jobs. This year, you've written your legal rhetoric memo. That's a really good writing sample for right now. So once you are applying for upper-level externships, you need to start having writing samples in your fields of interest. So plan to take some kind of writing course in your first semester next year so that you have a new writing sample by the end of your first semester of next year. Make it as practical as possible. Make sure there's no errors, no typos, no grammatical issues, that it's all flowing logically. Have other people look at it to make sure that it's as perfect as it can be, because that's something that can easily get you knocked out of the running for an externship or a position. Next thing I wanted to mention is that we offer summer institutes over the summer that would be relevant to people who are interested in criminal law. The first one is our Anti-Corruption Institute. That institute takes place over a week. I just went to the dean's office and I found a couple of, well, I have one flyer for the anti-corruption program, so I'll leave that up front if anybody wants to look at it later. It's a great program to introduce you to anti-corruption law, which is one of the hottest areas of white-collar crime today. So if you have any interest in international work especially, but just generally in corruption, this is a great institute to take. And then also we have a litigation skills summer institute that you can take where you can learn different skills, deposition training, trial testimony, things like that. This is actually last year's brochure, but I don't think that the courses are changing that much, so you can take a look at that as well. Finally, I want to just talk about white-collar crime for a bit. White-collar crime is a really fascinating area of law. It focuses both on issues of public corruption, like the McDonald case in Virginia that some of you may have followed in the last several months, the governor of Virginia who was convicted of bribery. And then also issues of securities regulation, government contracts, again, anti-corruption law. It's a very broad field, but it's in many ways different than regular criminal law. For that reason, there are different courses that you have to take to be marketable for a white-collar position after you graduate. So I've created this very long list of white-collar related classes that if you're interested in white-collar classes, I suggest that you take at least some of these. There's probably 30 classes on this list. You can't take all of those classes. I don't suggest that you take all of them. But take a look, and my contact information, including my online booking scheduler, is at the bottom of this. So if any of you want to talk about which classes to take, set up an appointment with me and we can strategize. Finally, about white collar. We've gotten into this cycle in white collar where students don't take it until their second semester of the third year, and then they don't get to take all of these follow-on courses. Because of that, we're trying something new next year to try to sort of reset the calendar for when people are taking white-collar crime. We're only offering it in the fall next year. It's going to be a lecture class during the day and a seminar in the evening. I'm teaching it during the day, and Professor Splatberg, who is a federal prosecutor, is teaching it in the evening. So if you think you want to take it before you graduate, I really suggest trying to take it next fall so that you can then have other options if you decide you like this area of law. And with that, I'll turn it over to you.
Thank you. Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Brenda Smith. I teach in the Community and Economic Development Law Clinic, but like many of our faculty here, we lead a little bit of a double life, right? And so I direct a project called the Project on Addressing Prison Rape. And that work came out of work that I brought into the institution before I was a law professor. I ran a program in a women's institution for about a decade, and in the course of doing that, the D.C. Department of Corrections, and so actually sued the Department of Corrections for having practiced sexual abuse of women in custody. About 700 plaintiffs in the litigation lasted over 10 years. I only talk about that to talk about how there are all kinds of different kinds of careers in practice. And so you can also be interested in criminal law, but also be interested in civil rights law or civil rights litigation. So, for example, a wonderful place if you're interested in criminal law is working for the Special Litigation Section for the Department of Corrections that does institutional work, nursing homes, prisons, and so on and so forth. I gave a little bit of my background because the reality is that even though you see folks who are sitting up here as criminal faculty, one of the best pieces of research you can do is look at folks who are part of the faculty and go down the list and looking at their vita to see what they did, right? Because it gives you some information about what you might want to do or ways that you might connect with them about things that you're interested in. I also mentioned and Angela mentioned that I teach in the clinical program. I teach in the Community and Economic Development Law Clinic, but we have 11 clinics, and almost all of them have something to do, have some piece that relates to advocacy. We have students who are in our civil practice clinic who are litigating in court. We have people who are in our immigration justice clinic who are arguing cases before the Virginia Supreme Court. And so the fact is there are lots. There's no way that you can go wrong with being involved with one of our clinical programs because it's going to give you the kind of background that's going to be very compelling if that's one of the things that you're interested in. So all of you guys are 1Ls, right?
Okay.
How many of you? No?
Oh.
Oh,
you're the only one.
Right. Okay.
We invited 2Ls.
Right. We invited 2Ls. Okay. So the how many of you applied, not the 2Ls, 1Ls, how many of you applied for the clinic?
This. Okay.
Great. How many of you, if you didn't get in, put your name on the wait list? Perfect. Okay. Absolutely right. Because the reality is that's also a wonderful opportunity to get into the clinic. This year at my clinic, we had 2 2Ls. Next year, I think that we're actually going to have more than that because the fact is we had a smaller class, right? So we're going to have the opportunity to have more in. And the reality is that people often before the semester actually drop. And so there's space for 2Ls. You know, I think that's a good piece. One of the things that Angela put up on the screen, which I think was great, and also that Amy talked about, is the tremendous number of offerings that we have here. All of those offerings are not necessarily on the screen. You really have to look at what is offered over through the registrar's office. So, for example, I teach a course called Women, Crime, and Law. It's a year-long course, right?
It's
Women, Crime, and Law. Professor Davis teaches, of course, race, crime.
I don't teach that.
Professor Jones teaches race.
I teach criminal defense.
And Professor Jones teaches race, crime, and the law.
My course is a
year-long course. It's 3 credits, 2 credits in the first semester, 1 credit in the last semester, and the reason is because I couldn't get good papers out of students in 1 semester. So it allows students to do an excellent paper over the course of a year. But it also involves visits, seeing people who practice in this area, and going back to Professor Tenney's comment, it also helps you to develop a really slamming writing sample in an area that people are interested in. So I would encourage you to not wait until your second semester, third year, to do your upper level writing requirement, okay? Try to get it done during your second year. It accomplishes a number of different things. I also wanted to mention as well, when you're talking about those writing samples, one of the things that's really underutilized is our librarians. Our librarians have incredible subject matter expertise. If you email Professor Kaufman, she can actually have somebody take a look at a paper that you're writing and give you some really good feedback on it. And finally, the other thing that I wanted to mention is that in addition to domestic law, there's also international criminal law. And being have projects, the War Crimes Office, of course, which happens over the summer at The Hague, is also a really good opportunity to make those kinds of connections. Also, increasingly, anything related to immigration also has a criminal justice component to it as well. And so there are all kinds of different touch points around criminal law, and I would encourage you to really take advantage of the very rich set of resources we have in terms of programs, faculty, and also courses to do that. And so I'm open to any other questions that you have.
So our students, let's see, since the prosecution has the burden of proof, you have to go first. Always has to go first. I'm going to have Tommy go first, and then you can come up with the defense.
Hi, everyone. My name again is Dominique Anglade, and
I did mispronounce your last name. I'm sorry.
Okay.
Anglade. I went Anglade. I was trying to be exotic. Anglade.
It could be both.
Oh, okay.
It depends on my French or not.
Oh, okay. So you're so better.
But I am a graduating 3L. As Professor Davis mentioned, I'll be working at the Manhattan DA's office in the fall. My road to get there was, I think, pretty basic, but maybe not. I had a particular interest in white-collar crime, and even though new ADAs at Manhattan DA's office don't necessarily try those kind of cases, I knew that that was one of the offices that I was interested in working at because the Manhattan DA's office does handle a large amount of white-collar crime, and I knew that that would be a prosecution office that I would want to eventually grow past the initial 3 years that they require that you commit. With that being said, while I was here at WCL, I took a lot of financial-related courses. I thought that might be pertinent for me. And I did have that list that Professor Tony was talking about. So
I just created it on Friday.
Oh, I received it from someone.
Oh, okay.
Someone gave you a list.
Someone gave me a list. And it was originally from you. And that was very helpful. And unfortunately, a lot of those classes are so desirable, but you can't take all of them. But I did take law and accounting. I took healthcare fraud and abuse. I took federal personal income tax. Mm-hmm. And I also took business associations. I thought that would be important. I believe that that was on the list as well. I took trial act classes. For me, I did mock trial and moot court in high school, but I'm a non-judicial student, so it was like several years or decades ago. And so sometimes you think you want to do something, but you don't necessarily know if you're going to be good at it or if you're going to like it. So for me, I took criminal trial advocacy my 2L year, my spring semester, just to see whether or not it was something that I could do, I would like to do, and it turned out that I really liked doing it. And so I continued to take other practical skills courses just to improve my trial advocacy skills. So I took evidentiary foundations and objections, and I also took civil trial advocacy. It was important for me just to kind of continue on the path of fine-tuning trial advocacy skills to get more comfortable with it. Trying to think what else. I think at one point I do have a financial background, and so that was one of the reasons why I also was interested in white-collar crime. But I also at one point in my life had worked for the Georgia Commission on Equal Opportunity, so I had sort of like mixed interest in criminal law, but then also employment law. And there was a class that was offered last year, which was public employment law and policy, and it focused on whistleblowers and corruption. And that I was drawn to that, and so that was the reason why I took that public employment law class. So even though it wasn't necessarily like specifically related to white collar crime, but it was somewhat doing whistleblowing. There's whistleblowing of people that are doing bad things at work and usually are perpetuating some kind of crime. So I thought that was interesting. And usually I know most students are encouraged by faculty, of course, to like pick one track and stay with it as far as like if you're going to do prosecution or defense, if there are employment reasons for that. For some reason I was like a risk taker, and I was like, okay, I'm really interested in criminal defense in the sense that if I'm going to be a prosecutor, I think I want to see the other side of it. So I applied for clinic, and I knew to apply for like the spring semester just so I could be safe. I mean, I did talk about it in my interviews with prosecution offices, so it didn't hurt me, at least not with my head DA's office. And So I am in the criminal defense clinic this semester, and it's a valuable experience for me. So that's just kind of like my path in a nutshell.
I'm also in the criminal defense clinic right now with Dominique, and I can't overemphasize how important it is to be a part of the clinic. If you're interested in defense or even prosecution, I would suggest if you have criminal defense as your top pick, just try to get in the spring, put your preference in the spring, because that's the only semester that they try jury trials, that you can take actually have a case in front of a jury and pick a jury. I just did that like 3 weeks ago. And it's really rare in real life to go to trial, so it's really valuable experience. But yeah, even if you can't get into a criminal-oriented clinic, just like I said, just having advocacy on your resume is super valuable, and they will just like, they will eat it up. Employers will eat up that you are able to communicate with and talk with clients and, you know, just handle that kind of stuff. My road to getting a job was more or less just kind of, I didn't really know I wanted to do criminal law until about winter break of my 2L year. It was actually a little bit after that. My top recommendation is the Public Defender Service externship. It's really, really underutilized. The only reason I feel like I got in it is because my professor, my pro professor, emailed her class students and said, no one is signing up for this class. It's super valuable. You guys should consider it. And I did it. And it was only like 10 kids. And basically, you intern with the Public Defender Service for about 15 hours a week. And exchange, one of the public defenders there will teach you trial advocacy skills. And it was pretty much the thing that convinced me that I wanted to be a public defender. And the office is great. And the people in there are super great. And they are all dedicated to the cause. And if you really want to be in an environment that really inspires you and be trained by some of the best people, that's the place to do it. And you should definitely take advantage of that since you are living here in D.C. Some of the best public defender offices are in the country are in here, like Montgomery County, the Virginia Public Defender, some of the federal defenders here. I also interned. So basically, I interned every semester I could. So it was the Public Defender Service that spring. Before that, I was actually at the Montgomery County State Attorney's Office for my first summer. And then I continued on to the fall to supervised underneath a felony attorney. So I've seen both sides, and it was actually the Montgomery County State Attorney's Office that kind of motivated me to see the other side. And then Public Defender Service kind of just kept me on that side of the aisle. But then that summer I stayed on with the PDS, and then that fall I was at the Federal Public Defender for the Eastern District of Virginia. So utilize your but any time you can get credit for working in an office where they actually do the work is really valuable. And the Eastern District of Virginia office is actually really interesting in that they actually, I got authorized to practice to, like, handle misdemeanor cases. I never had got the time because, like, you know, the court's dates didn't really add up for me. But if you time it right, you can get permission from the federal district court in Eastern District of Virginia to go up there and defend a client under the supervision of one of the public defenders there. So definitely consider that. I don't know if they still offer that same externship course for the Virginia Public Defender.
I'll speak a little bit about that. I'm not sure.
I just took juvenile justice last semester, and juvenile justice was awesome. It was just a seminar where you just read tons and tons and tons about how juveniles are affected by the criminal justice system. It was actually a healthy balance of people that are pro-public defense and pro-prosecution. So that's good. I know that some people can be concerned when you go into courses like that, but they may heavily lean towards the defense. I felt like I was getting a really good experience in getting other people's perspectives that were pro-prosecution. And it's taught by some really good professors. I would encourage you to, if you do choose to externship all throughout your year, to focus more on just taking a variety of different courses that pertain to criminal law, but aren't like conventional to like the state courts or anything like that. So I took national security law, and I focused a lot on like inmate detention in Guantanamo, and I thought it was really interesting. And I mean, a lot of it has to do with like federal constitutional protections, which I thought were always interesting throughout my entire time in law school. I'm taking federal courts right now, and they dabble in habeas corpus, and I think I think there is a habeas corpus course. I never took it, but I wish I did. And a couple courses that I didn't take that I definitely wish I did are evidentiary objections and foundations. Knowing how to utilize the procedures of the court and the evidence rules are super valuable. And the sooner you can get a head start on learning those and mastering those skills, like, just the better off you'll be. Advanced theory and practice course taught by Professor Davis is one of them that I didn't get a chance to take. And clinic is a good experience for that too. And I think there's also a collateral consequences course that just got instituted where you can actually interact with clients. I don't think it's under the clinic's banner, but you actually go out and take up clients in Montgomery County and try to get their records expunged, which is a good one. That's what I got.
Great.
Sure.
I totally forgot about my internships. So my one old summer, I was in the District of Columbia Office of Administrative Hearings, and I was in their Transportation and Public Safety Department, and that was really interesting because we dealt mostly with taxi cab drivers, and if they had gotten in trouble, whether they had gotten arrested or some kind of citation, and that was against like the policies of them being able to maintain their license, that they would have to come and either have a lawyer or defend themselves against the taxi cab commission. So that was really interesting. It wasn't necessarily directly related to criminal law, but somewhat, because the hearings were brought up because of some kind of criminal matter that was involving the taxi cab driver. I wanted to work at the Montgomery State Attorney's Office, but I applied too late for the 2L summer, and so I wound up working at the Department of Justice Criminal Law Division, which of course was a great experience as well. But that was one thing that I had to explain when interviewing with the case officers. Like, so we see, like, you know, you work for, you know, the Department of Justice, so we don't see any like local state's attorney's office. I applied again. The state's attorney's office had invited me to apply again for my 3L fall semester, but then I wind up getting invited to work at a judge in Federal Judges Chambers as a judicial intern, and so I had to accept once I got the offer. So that was like another time where I wasn't able to work at the state's attorney's office. But if you're interested in prosecution, definitely, you know, seek to work at a local state attorney's office and also the DOJ if you can. I thought that the DOJ experience was extremely helpful. I had a lot of writing opportunities on very interesting things, both for securities and financial fraud, and also for foreign corruption. And it was also the summer semester when I was taking evidentiary foundations and exemptions, so it was like I was immersed in evidence, and I loved it. And again, this past fall, I was at the D.C. District Court. So that's pretty much my path as far as the externships that I did while I was in school.
Before I open up the questions, I just want to clarify. So Robert was talking about his PDS externship. This was the one where you actually, you're working for an attorney and you take the course
right.
Also.
Right.
So it's kind of like a super externship where you get, is it 4 credits or 3?
It was 4. It was like 1 for the seminar and 3 for the actual externship.
Right. So there is that, but there are also the regular externships where you get,
right.
I think,
right.
2 credits. That does not involve a course that where you can just work for the attorney. So you
right.
have both options. Though the super externship, as I like to call it, has not been offered every semester because it's relatively new, and sometimes they haven't been able to get enough enrollment. And they had a similar program in the Virginia office as well, Virginia Public Defender Office. Alexandria,
the same
guy. Alexandria office. The same thing.
Work
for an attorney, but you also take a course. You can talk about both. We just want to clarify that there are those, but then there's also a variety of the regular 2-credit ones that are at numerous, you know, the Office of Public Defender from Maryland has offices in PG County, Howard County, Montgomery County, you know, a lot of those. There's some in Virginia, and then there's a DC Public Defender Services.
Angel, can I just add a couple of things?
Sure.
I wanted to mention 2 other courses that I think could be useful to you that a lot of students don't know about. The first is the role of the federal prosecutor.
Yeah.
That course is only offered every fall, and what's really interesting is that it's a consortium course. 5 students from each law school in D.C. are permitted to take the course, and it's taught by a federal prosecutor at the Department of Justice. It's very competitive to get into it, you know, in terms of your waitlist number, because only 5 students can get in. But because it's at Justice, you have to make sure that you plan around that because you'd have to go downtown. But it's, I mean, you really, if you're interested in criminal work, especially if you're interested in criminal defense, hearing what prosecutors have to tell you is really important. The other course I wanted to make sure you know about is that for the last year, 2 years, we've been offering an experimental course in criminal justice and immigration. It's called Consequences of Immigration or something. You may not know that it's a criminal law course by the title, but Bo Cooper teaches it, and it's been in the spring. I assume we're offering it again next spring, but especially for those of you interested in criminal defense, it's so important to know about the immigration consequences. So I would definitely look into that course as well.
The last thing that just came to my mind, I wrote it down, forgot to mention it. For the first time this year, the D.C. Public Defender Service offered a training during spring break. You guys, I see some people nodding. Did you take it?
I didn't, no.
Yeah, so I don't know what you thought of it, but
it was amazing.
That's the word I've been hearing from everybody, Jimmy, that it was amazing. We've spent your spring break there, an intense sort of week-long program at PDS. It takes students from various law schools in the area, and a number of our students, but they are every single one of them wanted to say, this is the best thing I've done since I've been in law school, because they never wanted to be a public defender. So, you have to apply for it, but it's only in the spring, it's during spring break. Now, questions, sorry.
What is the name of the PDS course that's the externship and the class?
It's just called Public Defender Service Externship.
Right. There was a problem with the name. I'm going to look for it while we take other questions. The first time it was offered, the name didn't really explain what it was, and that was one of the reasons they had such low enrollment. I know we got them to change the name. I'm going to look. Wow.
Here, it's actually...
did you find it?
Yeah, well, this is the draft schedule for next year.
Oh, okay,
it's
great.
Public Defender Services Supervised Externship, PDS, taught by Sears, for one credit.
Kia Sears, right.
Sears.
Great.
And it's Law 795D001. But this is the draft schedule, so it's possible it'll change.
When I applied, I had to, write, a brief letter, basically demonstrating why I wanted to do it, because I don't know if you still have to do that. I was in a weird situation where the person that previously taught it was kicked up as became a magistrate judge. So she was on her way out, and then she accepted me, and then Kia showed up at the last minute and filled in. So I don't know if they still do it that way. But
he says permission to enroll is required.
Okay.
Yeah, permission to enroll, and that's the same thing with my criminal defense class that you start right here. So criminal defense theory and practice, you just have to write a short essay describing your interest in and commitment. Defender work, and I think it's a similar thing there. And so you don't get in that information. Do you have a follow up for me?
She can go first, but okay. I have another one and something else.
Go ahead.
You mentioned that you like the evidentiary foundation for objections course, and I believe it's a trial odd course. So do you have to take the other trial odd course first before you?
I actually didn't take it. I wish I did, but she took it.
I took it, and I had already taken trial ad, so I can't remember if it's a prerequisite or a prerequisite. Because they were in the class and were taking the Litigation Skills Institute, and they sort of took trial ad at the same time. They were taking evidentiary foundations and objections. But I think it's a prerequisite, but online it'll tell you if it's a prereq or a prerequisite.
Okay.
This is so I know that I want to do an externship in the fall, but obviously right now I don't know where I'm going to be externing it. So how should I factor that in when I'm registering for classes? Should I just automatically expect that I'm going to get one and then just have my credits around that, or what should I do?
So when I did it, when I applied and I didn't know where I was yet, I just made sure that all of my seminar classes and all the classes I took here at WCL were in the evening. And that I would just front load all of my classes onto a Monday and Wednesday, and then just have Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday open. But basically, just make sure that you have huge gaps of time where you can travel and work meaningful hours.
I want to also obviously talk to Avis Sanders, because she can really assist you in sort of thinking about this. One of the other things that I want to mention is somebody who sort of sees students often in their terminal year, right, their third year, So we have people in clinic who are doing clinic, an externship, and an internship.
At the same time.
At the same time. Recipe for disaster. It just, I mean, I think it's Angela, they're all different things. And I understand, you know, sort of people are really trying to hedge their bets in terms of sort of getting themselves out there for job reasons. But the fact is that if you don't do a good job, like if you're sort of running here to make ball, it is not actually going to kind of work out to your favor. And I've seen a number of sort of pileups on the side of the road. I'm seeing that. And so, as Angela said, we have so many offerings. This is a real opportunity to be thoughtful about that. And the reality is we have so many experiential offerings, you know, the trial ad, the internship, the externship, that people can actually go through and do short shrift on their classes as well. And so that's one of the things that you have to be mindful of sort of a balance and really thinking about doing a good job in whatever you decide to do, whether it's an internship, whether it's an externship. And this is a great time to actually sit down and sort of plot it out and think about, I want to do this, I want to do this, I want to do that. Same thing with all of the mock trials and all of that stuff. That can, again, be another nice little pile up on the side of the road when you actually have clients that you need to be representing.
Can I piggyback off what you're saying? So my tool, you know, I kind of took it light. Like, I had, like, a target, like, goal of, like, where I wanted to be GPA-wise, and I was on journal, and that's pretty much what my focus was, and I took a lot of classes, and I did extern my tool year, which I don't necessarily recommend for people, but I was just, like, very dead about, like, where I would want to work, and so I was like, okay, this is what I need to do. And, but I began to feel the pressure of, like, oh, I have all these friends, and they're, like, Bloom's Fellows, and they're, you know, in this society, and they're doing all this stuff. And so, for some reason, I was like, okay, so my last year, I'm going to intern, my 3L fall semester, and I had no idea at the time that I was actually going to be on mock trial. And so, I interned, I was on mock trial, I was taking classes, and I was a note and comment editor. So I applied to be a note and comment editor for my journal. And, of course, I was trying to find a job. And with, like, competing that semester and doing a judicial internship, obviously, like, you have to do an excellent job doing that. And it was just very overwhelming. I thought I was going to go crazy. And then, of course, I was like, oh, I did all this great work, you know, academically. And I was like, don't screw up. Like, what are you doing? So it was definitely hard. So you definitely want to pace yourself. So this semester, I only am only doing clinic, but I also did mock trial. I'm also doing comment editor. And here I thought, like, oh, I'm only part-time. You know, everything should be great, but it's actually a really busy semester. There's so many hours that you have to dedicate to tending to your client or clients, depending on, like, there's, like, a period of time where you may have some overlap between one client and another client in the criminal defense clinic, and, of course, all clinics are different from how many clients you get. But you've got to do fact investigation. You've got to talk to your client, and you've got to do research, and you've got to write things, and so that takes a lot of time and attention. You want to do it right, like someone's liberty interest or financial interest at stake, and so it's like you can't put that to the side, like, oh, I have this fake trial coming up. No, you have, like, a real trial that you need to prepare for. And so it's definitely a juggling act, and I can't imagine having classes on top of, you know, being a note and comment editor and doing the mock trial competition, which took longer than I thought it was. But so I definitely agree. It's like, talk to people who have different positions and you know, talk to them about their routines and figure out what works well for you, because, you know, someone could do 10 things and that works for them, but maybe you're not that kind of person that can do 10 things or 5 things, so you need to know yourself, and if that's what you really want, you have to just be a lot more disciplined and make sure that you have to obviously, like, cut down on your personal time perhaps or whatever, but you definitely want to still do well in class, you want to still do well by your clients if you're in clinic, and you still want to do whatever you can commit yourself to, but don't overcommit if you don't have to.
No, I'm so glad they mentioned that, because when I started out, I said you should try to do both. I absolutely did not mean that. Do not do an externship and clinic at the same time. I mean, it's just too much. Even for people who juggling a lot of things, and there's no reason to do it. So I won't repeat what's been said.
Right. Because what happens is that you have to work sometimes later because maybe your clients work during the day, so you have to meet them later, and then some of the witnesses, they work during the day, so you may not be able to meet them until like the weekend or the evening. So you think like, oh, I'll just do evening classes, and then during the day I'll do internship, and you schedule it just around the clinic seminar. Like, it's just a recipe for disaster.
Yeah. Sorry, we'll go to the question.
Okay.
I was just going to say, like, yeah, you just, like Brenda said, like she said, just make sure that, like, when you do externship and stuff that you're managing your time enough to, like, get the reference that's a good reference. Like, you want the reference to be, like, he was, like, really consistent, he worked hard, you know, had time to like stay late if we needed him to stay late, you know. And like if you look at the resume, the clinic is like when they say that you've done clinic for a semester but you did an extern, it's fine because like the clinic is something that goes underneath work experience already. And I think they value clinic experience way more than an externship when it comes to choosing between the two.
And that's the thing. If you go there, it's not just having it on your resume. If an employer calls. I mean, you want to go there and get the good recommendation. So, I mean, it's not just enough to have it on. It's worse to have it on your resume. Because, you know, you put your references down there, but people know folks at these offices.
They do.
And they're not just going to call your references, because, of course, your references are going to say great things. They're going to call the person there who, you know,
knows,
they know, who may have seen you and say, you know, this person, how they do. So you want to have that good reputation.
I also want another thing that I think we mentioned this, but I want to also emphasize this again for students who are 1Ls, right? Deans, fellows, physicians, right? You know, oftentimes you can do amazing research and work with faculty on particular projects that give you incredible subject matter expertise. And so that's also something that you want to think about. The same rules apply, though. I think a lot of people get the dean's fellows positions, and it's like, okay, this is free money, right? And the fact is it really isn't, because these are the folks that they're gonna call. And you know, I'll give an example. I have two great dean's fellows worked with me on expert reports, two cases where I was an expert, so they worked on expert reports. They worked on federal legislation. They have worked on two law review articles. I mean, and so on and on. So very substantive projects that I can say, I saw this person's work. This is what they did. And so there are many, many opportunities. And so again, another thing to do is to take a look at the faculty who are doing things that you may be interested in and find out if they have any positions available for dean's fellows in the fall. So there's a range, not in the fall, but in the summer. So there are a range of different things that you can do as well, if you're interested in that.
Okay, yes. I have a comment and then a question. The comment pertaining to the Child Practice Institute that PDS is running during the spring. It was a great experience because not only do they teach you how to do an opening and a closing, but they also teach you how to do a direct and a cross. And just some common objections of and evidence type related issues. Not only that, but you get to work with attorneys that are working felony one cases, so people that have been there for 5, 6, 7, 10 years. So these are some of the top attorneys at PDS. And lastly, you also get to form a relationship with Jen Thomas, who's the legal recruiter there. So if you didn't think that PDS might have been within your scope because of its competition, an institute like that during spring is a really good strategic move because it literally puts you in the short running to anything moving forward. So I was very lucky to do that. And then that's my comment. With my question directed to Professor Smith, I'm interested in community development, and I'm interested in tying that in with my criminal defense work that I'm interested in as well. What are your recommendations for classes that kind of hit both topic areas and complement each other?
So poverty law would be a great class to take. Clearly, community and economic development
would be great. Business associations would be great as well. One of the things that we do in the Community and Economic Development Clinic is we do a lot of stuff with reentry and entrepreneurship. So we actually go out looking for people who have issues getting back into the workforce because of their criminal justice backgrounds. You know, one of the things that I have to say, and I was so glad that you said this, Dominique, I think a lot of people in interest work, they don't think that they need to know anything about money. You know? And I have to say, I mean, like, we're really great on the rhetorical arguments, but if anybody makes an argument that has anything to do with the balance sheet or with money or something like that, it's just like, whoa, 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 whoa.
You know, and so I'm big on taking
business associations, income, federal income taxation, and again, just again, thinking about the different kinds of clinical offerings here. For example, our low-income taxpayer clinic, they do a lot of cases involving people who have tax issues directly related to their imprisonment, right? So people who have a tax bill because somebody filed for an earned income tax credit using their Social Security number, you know? And so there are many, many opportunities. I think any kind of course that you can take that involves writing, where somebody actually gets a chance to look at your writing, whether or not, in some ways, I don't even think it makes a difference what kind of class it is, as long as you have the opportunity for somebody to take a very good look at your writing and for you to work closely with somebody on those kinds of issues.
Any kind of opportunity to stand up and make an argument.
And also, I mean, I could go on and on, but I am very much one of those people who really believes in cross-training, you know?
Thank you.
About the comment with the gentleman in the blue shirt was wearing. So this past summer I was with DOJ, and like on a weekly basis they offered trainings, and so I know like you all may be going to wherever this summer, that they may offer like optional trainings that they offer for their attorneys, and that was the training that they offered on Fridays at DOJ, and it was really weird because I had other interns in the office, and I think they were interested in big law, so like they weren't interested in going to those trainings. So like maybe the first week they showed their face, and then after that they didn't. But as the weeks went by, I continued to go, and that helped me build a relationship right with the attorneys that were there. So if there are, and the other interns, they decided like they wanted to like eat right outside of the White House, and I was like, no, no, I just did that. I mean, I could eat with them like four of the other days of the week, but for that particular opportunity, since they were opening up to interns, I wanted to go ahead and continue to do that. So, you know, keep your eyes open for those kind of trainings at the professional organizations that you're going to be working at during the summers. And even if your counterparts may not be going, if they're opening up to interns, you should definitely make it up more than one during the summer.
Any DC Bar events, great opportunities to go and meet people and, you know, make connections, because often students don't show up, right? So you're there and people are just, you know, talking. And you know, the other thing is even though it may seem a little cheesy, have a card. You know, get yourself some little cards made up, you know, pass them out. We can talk about what the cards look like, you know, and then follow up with somebody. I have somebody who approached me first semester saying, I'm interested in being a fellow. It was really early, and she has followed up with me two or three times, and we're going to meet on Friday. Right, because I'm picking my Dean's Fellows for the summer.
And there was one event that they had, like, how did I become a federal prosecutor? And there was actually a WCL alum there. I was like, oh, wow, it's neat. And so I reached out and I connected with him. He took me out to coffee and talked and was able to, like, get an idea of his path. But I think it's really interesting. You never know who you're going to meet and who they know. Right. And it could just lead to, you know, different things. And I wasn't interested necessarily in working in Chicago, but that's where he worked. And he was like, if you want to work for, you know, the Chicago State's Attorney's Office, let me know when you apply, and I'll call them. And so you definitely don't want to pass up opportunities to connect with people if they're willing to help you.
And our alums are amazing. I mentioned that alumni map on the Criminal Justice Institute website. We also, the Institute also has a alumni listserv of about 300 alums who are practicing either as prosecutors, defense attorneys, or used to be either one, or in policy areas. And they love, you know, coming to and helping with our students and connecting with students. just terrific in so many ways. So just yet another reason to register. So there are not any other questions. We were actually supposed to have said 12:50, although I had said 1:01. I don't know if there's a class in here or what, but thank you all.